for the city of Broken Arrow, you become quite a historian for them.
I have.
Written for them and produced a CD on their history.
And we're doing an update of the book that was written for the centennial year, but the first 100 years to bring it up to modern times. Now it'll be 113 years of the history of Broken Arrow.
About education in Oklahoma today, there seems that there's such a shortage in the state budget. We today are facing a shortfall. As a matter of fact, they just discovered they had money in House Bill 1017. But there's always that drag to have enough money for education. Was that disappointing to you as a superintendent?
It is terribly disappointing because it's the result of so many things that the leadership in the state has caused to go into law that has reduced the sources of income. They've granted so many exemptions that have shortened the income for the state. It's really frustrating to try to deal with that.
It just seems that that would be one of the things that if you're going to put any money into its education, it just always surprises me that that doesn't seem to be the goal.
It isn't in recent years in Oklahoma. We're at the bottom of the stack in the nation in the way we support public education. I don't see how the leadership in industries would want to move to a state that does not give stronger emphasis to education.
Right. About your family, you had three children.
I have three children.
And their names.
Our oldest is Paul. Our middle son is Mark. And our daughter is Shirley. We have seven grandchildren. Most are married. We have five great-grandchildren. So we now have four generations of Olivers living in Broken Arrow. The community is burdened with with the clan.
Yeah, well, they're very fortunate to have you, of course. And then Vanita, she died in what year?
2009.
And how many years were you married?
60.
That was a great loss to you. And she was how old?
She was 79.
You've been able to move on?
I'm living alone and keeping very busy. I'm still writing. I'm on several boards of directors of foundations and one company and several mostly nonprofit organizations. And I'm deeply involved in the community. I do free work at the university. I volunteer. I serve on doctoral dissertation committees, and I do guest speaking every semester in the graduate courses there. I present history programs all over the area and just keeping very busy.
And I've got to remind folks, you're listening to a man who's 85 years old, to think of how active a person can be. And you did have a health issue, but now apparently, obviously, whatever it is monitored and under control, that you can be that busy. You told me you had three board meetings tomorrow.
I do have. I have three board meetings tomorrow and one the following week. I have two more the next week.
Well, you're very fortunate. And you've just finished a book, An Administrator's Guide, Leading with Integrity. Tell us a bit about that.
The School Administrators Association asked me about 12 or 13 years ago to write a book offering some guidance in ethical behavior for school administrators. The executive had heard me make a presentation at a business meeting in Oklahoma City of people who were in the insurance industry. I'd been asked to make a comment about integrity or ethics in purchasing activities, and I had put together a program for that group, and the school administrator executive was for some reason attending the meeting and heard it, and he said, can you expand on that and do something for us in school administration? We don't have an ethics book. So I did. I put together a small booklet called Ethical Behavior. It was larger than they wanted, so they kept cutting it down. It ended up being just a small pamphlet that dealt with a few areas of how people should behave ethically in purchasing and human resources management in a number of areas. And that was a popular book they gave to all their association members. It was out of print. It was self-published, and they just printed a certain number, and they've been out. So 2 years ago, the new executive asked if I could do a new book for them or update that one. And they assigned me to work with an ethics committee of the association to start on that process. So this has been a two-year project. They first said, we don't want to lose what was in the first book. And I said, well, we'll try to keep some of that that's still appropriate. So we worked with the group and some consultants in putting together issues on ethics and morality and the law. And obviously, if you're getting into the area of ethics, you have to have a value system that you've developed, and those are opinions. People don't have the same opinion about things. So I wrote the book as a personal reflection on ethics and morality and the law. And my recommendations for things that I felt were moral or ethically correct in doing them. There's been a lot of writing nationally about the failure of leaders to behave in an ethical manner. Something can be legal and not necessarily ethical. We see examples of that all the time. We see examples of people who have made bad decisions and have lost their careers as a result of it. So it's something that we think at least will cause administrators to think about these issues and hopefully to have a value system, an internal compass that they can follow that cause them to make good decisions as school leaders. It's just released. They're giving it to all the members of their association. It is available nationally instead of being a limited publication. It's available in hardback, softcover, and electronic version. Interestingly, two universities, graduate schools of education, have adopted it for ethics classes as a textbook.
Which schools are those?
University of Oklahoma has, ORU has, and NSU is considering it. It's just out. It's only been out a few days. And people in the business community are buying it. I've already had some invitations to make presentations and book signings totally unrelated to education, so I don't know how that's going to work
out. Well, I was going to say, could our political leaders take some guidance from this?
Well, they were considering giving copies to the legislators. I don't know if they will.
Okay.
I don't own the book. The school administrators own it now.
You've given it back, haven't you?
It's a give back to the profession activity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's amazing. And you love to write. You wrote me a personal letter here right. As you handed me the book, and I appreciate that very much. Students are listening. They could be in high school, early days of college. What kind of advice do you give to students?
Not to be discouraged. As you asked that question, I instantly thought of a book that I've been reading recently. My early morning activities include riding a bicycle, an indoor bike. I have a reading rack on it. I read a lot of books through the year. And I'm just finishing a book by John Maxwell by the title of Sometimes You Win, Sometimes, and people would think the next line would be lose, but over the lose, he has imprinted, you learn. I think people need to be aware that they should never be discouraged if they don't win everything. You learn from those mistakes that are made and take that learning and turn it into an experience that you can continue to improve. Always have confidence that you can do better than you've done. And obviously, returning to my feeling of faith that I probably have spoken of too much today, but I have on the wall in my bedroom a cross-stitch sampler that my wife made several years ago as a birthday gift. It's a quotation from King Solomon that's in his writings, and it has the message, trust in the Lord, lean not on your own understandings, and all your ways acknowledge him, and he will direct your steps. And for those of faith, let him direct their steps.
Right. How would you like to be remembered?
I think I would like to be remembered using the cliche that I left the woodpile a little higher than I found it.
Well, there's no question about that. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. I've always heard about you, but never did get to sit down face to face and visit with you. You have a career that many of us thought was just superintendent, which was a high calling, but you've had all these other careers. So it was my honor to visit with you and include this part of Voices of Oklahoma.
Thank you. Yeah, our visits were 6 o'clock telephone calls. We're not going to have school today, John.
Right.
That was back in the days when you really made a decision. You drove the roads and, well, our buses just can't make it today. Sit down at the weather forecast and it's going to snow. Well, we're not going to go today.
Yeah, you don't miss those calls in the morning, I'm sure.
I do not.
Nor do I miss getting up at 3:30 in the morning.
I bet you don't. Well, you were a great talk show host. I remember a lot of the shows. I love to listen, and I made a comment. I love to listen to you in the morning. But I remember so much of the fun that was had about the Tulsa Mountains
right.
And the truck driver that gave you such a fit.
Yeah.
You added such a delight to the start of the day for a lot of us.
That's back when radio was fun.
It was fun.
They can't do that anymore
today.
And I was there in the sweet spot of KRMG. Yeah. I was just lucky. I really was. As Chester Caggio says, better to be lucky than good.
That's right.
I was really lucky.
But
you were good.
No, you were good. You were a great radio talk show host.